Hey, Life Coach Mike here, lifecoachmike.com. Hey, going to do something a little different here in the summer of 2019. Going to open up this podcast to all of our 8,000-plus coaches. We've been getting a lot of requests to get Coach Morgan on, and just the schedules haven't worked out. But, man, this is a great podcast. Coach Mike Morgan from Merrimack, going into his 13th season. Guy's record is 164 wins, 41 losses. Has won, listen, no less than 11 games in the last 12 seasons. Back-to-back national championships, Division II. Now they're about to enter the Division I arena. I found the coach to be incredibly well-organized, fast and organized. I would best describe his practice. I hope you enjoy it. Again, this is Life Coach Mike, lifecoachmike.com. Without any further ado, Coach Mike Morgan, Merrimack.
Hey, Coach, it's my radio voice, just so you know, I want to warn you, right?
Got it.
Hey, it's Life Coach Mike, lifecoachmike.com. Love you guys to death. In answer to your emails, quit emailing me, right? We've got them. Coach Mike Morgan from Merrimack, just so thrilled to have you on, Coach. Thanks for coming.
Oh, thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, listen, yeah, obviously, unbelievable success and great news. Maybe we'll touch on later in terms of moving into the D1 ranks and
sure.
And all that kind of stuff. One of the things I just wanted to open with that I think is so cool. I read in your bio that you were a high school coach for 4 years. You know, you just don't see that with the guys that we do interviews with, but yet, you know, most of our audience is high school coaches. I mean, we got a lot, sure. a lot of college coaches listen to us too, but at the end of the day, man, you're one of us. You've gone from a high school coach into a big time. Now you're like on all the websites and you're plastered all over YouTube and Championship Productions thinks you walk on water. Just wanted to say, cool. Tell me a little bit about the transition from high school to college.
Yes, it's a road that I guess very different, like you said, than a lot of guys kind of walked, I guess, to get here. I graduated from here in 2000 from Merrimack, and realized really quickly when I was in the business world that I needed that competitive edge, I guess, to get back into coaching or, you know, certainly getting back into the sport. And I started coaching at St. Dominic's, and they had a job opening. And ironically, it's where I went to high school. So I was back on Long Island and, you know, coached there. And we did a pretty good job. I mean, we had some really good assistants helped me out. And, you know, we went from, I think they won 2 games the year before we got there. And I want to say we were like 500 or a couple games over. And obviously, you're playing in a tough league with Chaminade, St. Anthony's, and those teams. It's hard to come by with, you know, get some wins. But yeah, I learned a lot from just, you know, grinding at that level. You know, it was a non-traditional program down there, and, you know, trying to get these kids to really buy in and figure out, you know, how to build that culture and how to win games. And I think it made me certainly better, you know, going into college. And I got my opportunity, at Merrimack as a volunteer for 1 year and then an assistant for 1 year and then basically got the head job at 27. So it's been seems like a long time, but it wasn't really, I guess I was kind of on the side, but it's, you know, as much as it's different, it's, you know, it's just, you get to pick the kids here, which makes it a little easier, the type of kid you're looking for. But yeah, it's been a great road. It makes it,
yeah, if you could pick the parents, you'd really have something, huh?
Yeah. You know, you got to figure out how to pick the kids through the parents. You know, you kind of have an idea when they come in, some might be a little more of a handful, but yeah, it's usually the kids who gravitate to our program. And I think, like you said, you know, you see the different things online, whether it be, you know, our documentary videos and stuff like that. I think you realize really quickly what you're getting yourself into. So the guys that really, you know, commit to here and want to be here, you know, are very, very aware of what we are.
Yeah, so, Coach, before we get into the practice, man, just give the listeners a 30-second snapshot on Merrimack. I think most of the people are very familiar with the name, but not familiar with the academics,
sure.
The culture of the college, and all those kind of things. Can you give me just a 30-second commercial on Merrimack?
Yeah, there's probably 3 parts to it. The first one is, you know, the academics. We're a high-end school academically. Probably our biggest concentrations that we get the most attention for is engineering, certainly business, sports medicine. And we have a, you know, litany of other high-level
right.
majors where it makes us, you know, we have a
did
great
you
ability.
Did you use the word
it.
Litany in a podcast
did,
with me?
Yeah.
Man, I am impressed.
I'm a cultured lacrosse coach, I guess, apparently.
Right out of the gates, making
yeah,
me look bad.
Yeah, I have a list of ones that I actually have in front of me that I'm crossing off that I'm trying to use throughout the actual podcast. But no, and then the school in general, you know, it's north of Boston, about 25 minutes. So you got the city right there, but you're in a college town and about 4,000 kids here. And, you know, you have a really great 275-acre campus. So it's a big, you know, footprint for a medium-sized school, you know. And then the lacrosse, obviously, you know, we've had some success with, you know, three national championship appearances, and we won the last two, and, you know, obviously going to Division One, you know, next year. So I think, yeah, I mean, it's a really great product, and I think it makes it, you know, you see the guys we're getting. And I think certainly most of these guys are Division One players anyway, you know, we were getting before. So now, you know, the transition for us, you know, we just move forward. But, yeah, it's a great school. I mean, obviously, I went here, so I believe that. But I think you're just seeing, you know, the overall academic, athletic, and, you know, just the atmosphere of the campus is what really sells the place.
So, Coach, let's get it on, man. So,
sure.
You know, understanding fall ball is fall ball, and understanding – you know, different days of the week and the opponent and all that kind of thing certainly have an impact. Do you have a general kind of template that you use for practice?
Sure. Yeah, I think one thing we've always believed in here is you have to have it all mapped out so you don't coach, I think, emotionally. You know, I think it was Greg Cannella who said to me early on when I first started, he's like, you know, you have to fight the urge to, you know, to play in the fall. You know, he's like, because, you know, you get back, the weather's great, you get a few days a week, you want to see your freshmen, you want to see your transfers, you know, you get out there, you've been itching all summer to get back, and then, you know, you go out there and you're running too much full field or too much sixes, or you're, you know, he always talked about, and I believe in, a lot of coaches do, is you have to really develop during the fall. So you have to fight the urge, I think, to play until you get, I think, closer to your first scrimmages. I think once you have that, you've got to start making sure your offense is in, you know, between the lines, you know, all that stuff. But I think in the beginning, it's really, for us, it's really small group skill stuff. It's fundamentals. It's, you know, it's teaching everything from terminology to watching film with the guys, to let them understand the position and kind of just ramp them up. But back to your template question, we have two. We have one template for the fall and one for the spring. And what we do is we basically put, you know, we have our coaches meeting and we put all our stuff up on the whiteboard. I mean, everything from zone offense, zone defense, you know, riding, clearing, man up, man down, face-off rotations, everything across the board, all our offenses, all our defenses. And then we map out based on, you know, this template each day and what we want to put in. Now, also, when I said coach emotionally, I also believe you have to be able to adjust too. Like, you have different teams for different years. Like 2 years ago, our whole offense came back. So did we have to spend as much time in 6-on-6? No, not really. So we moved that time somewhere else. But I think you can adjust on the fly. Like, hey, we look terrible clearing the ball. We need to maybe do that tomorrow and maybe skip this until. So you want to have a general template so you don't miss anything, but also I think you can move things around. But I think for us, it's always been fall. Teach as much as possible. Once you get near your first scrimmages, start implementing more of sixes and obviously your full field man-to-man down. And then in the spring, it's really just ramping up each day with different things. Like we'll match up what we're doing in Indy on both ends. And you know, if we're doing, you know, two-man game offensively, we're teaching two-man game defensively at our end. So then once, you know, that 10-15 minute session's over, where we're going over all that stuff and repping it, then we get to go against each other and we're running a drill that'll have, you know, a two-man component to it. So everything is, you know, specific to a reason. And as you know, with most coaches, there's, you know, there's no coincidence sometimes between what you're doing and what you're planning. So we try to keep it as consistent as possible, but make sure we hit on everything and have the guys as prepared as possible.
So, Coach, here's the magic question, man, and I think I know the answer, right? And I'll explain why in a second.
Sure.
Do you share the practice plan with the players or not?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, we...
Oh, you do share?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I got the first one wrong.
Really? Well, I mean, again, it's a theory thing. Like, for us, I think sharing the practice plan, if you have variety to your practice, which we do, I don't think sharing the practice plan is a big deal. I know some people don't, and I have no problem with that, but I think for us, I want our guys, you know, mentally, you know, looking at it and understanding what we're doing, which I think, you know, when we have, we mentioned this a little bit before, you know, some days we come out with, you know, a high rep stick drill to start the practice, and then some days we come out with a 15-minute, you know, cones are on the corners and at the box, and, you know, we'll have one of the, you know, two of the coaches officiating, and, you know, the clock's running, and we'll just go right into a hard quarter right off the bat. So I think if you have variety, the guys are, you know, essentially guessing because, you know, they don't have the same practice every day. We have we put a quote of the week on there, too, you know, which, you know, always has some, or a quote of the day, I should say. It always has some, you know, I guess, correlation to where we are or where we're going, or, you know, so we'll basically have, you know, somebody kind of explain why it's up there, what it means before practice in the huddle. And, you know, it's a way of, I guess, keeping the guys, you know, viewing the game as a coach, you know. And then once we get out there, you know, it's pretty much, they forget the practice plan throughout the drills anyway. I mean, you know, you see it all the time. We'll be in like this.
Yeah, we get coaches that are so detailed. They talk about which middies change to which colors. And then
yep.
It's probably about, I would guess about 65-35. 65 of the coaches we've interviewed don't share the practice plan, and maybe 35 do.
Yeah, I think for me it's also it shows a sign of preparation too. Like, you know, if you know, if you don't have a good practice, I think it'd be very easy for your guys if you know, if there's any holes in your culture, to be like, well, we're not even prepared. Like, what did they even do this practice plan, or we just do it on the fly? You know, for me it's like when they walk in that locker room every single day, they see exactly what we're doing mapped out based on what the coaches sat and discussed, and a quote that's relevant, it just screams preparation, you know. So for them, it's like, I think they can see it, like, all right, you know, they're ready. And again, it, you know, what we go over here, there's no right or wrong. It's just, you know, what I kind of believe in, what the guys believe in. And, you know, it's always good to hear the other side, too, because it makes you think.
All right, so, Coach, what time of day do you practice?
Well, the fall, you know, once we built the stadium, more so late afternoon, early evening, you know, we'll do like 6 to 8, maybe 5 to 7. Spring, you know, consistently now we're around 4 to 6, but with the Division I move and some of the availability with scheduling of classes, you know, we might look to go more midday, you know, maybe like right after lunch or prior to lunch. So we have some flexibility there. I mean, having the two big turfs, and, you know, obviously with only two teams practicing in the spring and season, it's pretty easy for us to be flexible. And we got to be, you know, as time goes by, I got to be cognizant, you know, of nutrition and sleep and all that stuff now, or maybe when I was playing, or, you know, back in the day, you didn't think about it. But, you know, you want to make sure the guys can go in and eat a good lunch and practice and stuff. So, you worry about putting those things kind of, you know, on the forefront when you're picking your practices.
All right, man, so it's 4 o'clock. What happens?
So 4 o'clock usually, you know, coaches will be in the office around 3:15. You know, we have two assistants that are upstairs, and we have, you know, a volunteer guy, an ops guy. So they'll come in, and, you know, we basically just kind of sum up the practice plan. I have an idea of what we want to do already. We've communicated during the day. We'll go hang it up. We'll kind of sit down as a staff and discuss what we want to do. And like you said, we'll have different days where, you know, we're switching the middies 5 minutes through, you know, full field. We want the twos repping with. So we're very meticulous about how we do it, like most coaches are. And I think, you know, once we go out there, the guys are out there quarter of, and they're doing their dyno, and they're, you know, getting stretched, and then we go. I mean, one thing about us is, and it's a compliment I've heard from a few coaches, and, you know, it's always good to hear, is like, there's just absolutely no wasted time in our practices. You know, we go from drill to drill. One little thing we did, I actually got it from our old hockey coach here, Mark Dennehy, is, there was always lag time between drills, you know, getting the balls or pucks where they got to go and this. So one thing we put in, which was kind of a hidden conditioning, yet competitive, yet, you know, mental, physical toughness, also, you know, I guess structural for getting the balls to the next drill, is we'll do after our, and again, this depends on once you start getting closer to your games, you know, it varies, you know, you don't want to burn the guys out. Sure. But after, like, your second drill, we do a 55, which is end line to midfield, back to the end line, full field and back, in under 55 seconds. So, you know, if you're running hard, you'll make it pretty much, you know, like you got to grind. And then once you get through the line, you already know what the next drill is, where the balls go. So the guys, if they get through the line, you jog and you grab a ball, you come back to the huddle, and basically the last three guys that don't come back with a ball do an extra lap around the field. So you immediately have, you know, you have the inherent punishment of your running, but also it's like, when those guys bring it in, you're like, all right, last three, and last three know if they're last three, and they just start jogging on one lap, and then right away we know where we're going with the balls, we jog it, we put them down, and we're going, you know. So, like,
right,
it builds, I think, that little bit of like, yeah, you're tired, guess what, no one cares, you know, you're beat, yeah, I get it, no one cares, you know. And I think at the end of the day, you got to be able to fight, you know, fight through that. If we've had a hard practice and you're really beat and you go out there and you're feeling sorry for yourself that, oh, I don't know if I can make the 55, well, guess what? Like, the whole team's going to run it again. So I think it builds that pressure. But also, like I said, you're moving in the next drill. One of the probably best things we ever adapted, and I'll give Matt Carwick a lot of credit for, when he came from Notre Dame and he was coaching here before, obviously he's at Colgate now, and, you know, Matt was great here, and one of the things they implemented is how they kind of structurally put out the water bottles at Notre Dame. And, you know, we did the math. I did an interview a while ago about this, and I'll get the numbers roughly right. I want to say you have about 14 weeks in the spring that you're practicing, and, you know, you're practicing 5 or 6 times a week, depending on games and everything else. Ends up being about, you know, 80 practices, let's just say. So then we were looking at, like, how much do you spend on water breaks? Like, how much time do you actually spend from end of drill to the next drill starts? And we figured it was about, you know, about 8 to 10 minutes, you know, from literally to go over there, all right, let's go. So then we did the math, and we're like, all right, 80 practices, 10 minutes of practice, 800 minutes, and then you do the math, and then you realize that, you know, you're losing 7 practices a spring, 7
right.
full practices,
right.
taking a water break.
Right.
So
right.
what we did is we were like, you know, we talked to our trainers, and we made sure we bought, you know, extra, you know, those Gatorade squeezable, or whatever, I don't want to give them a free plug, but, you know, whatever, the squeezable ones, and they're all over the field. So literally guys come out of drills, quick squirt, and you go. Like, there's no breaks, you know. So at the end of the day, they're still getting hydrated, but you don't have the start and stop. And I've seen it, you know, I visited some practices, you know, D1, 2, and 3, and some people, I guess, are still doing, I mean, some people still do line drills, and they pass running at each other, I guess. So I don't know, you know, times have changed, but, like, for us, it was a cool thing he adopted. When you actually did the math, and you're like, we're losing 7 practices a year, or I'm sorry, spring, because we're giving guys water breaks when we can just have them grab them on the side, you know? So I think efficiency is one thing where we're high on. I think it starts, like you said, from the template of practice coming in, and there's just, you know.
Yeah, I love it, man. I mean, I did the same math. Let's say you're practicing an hour and a half, and the guys are taking 8 or 9 minutes apiece. It's 20% of my practice went to water.
Yeah, and again, it's like, and there's also something to, you know, lack of, or I guess, loss of momentum, I guess I would say. Like, when you go over to water break, there's no,
oh my God,
there's no intensity there. You're going over to joke, to drink water, and then you put your stuff back on. It's like, oh, and then to get going, I've always believed that, you know, when you get between the lines, like, you go, and then when you're done, you're done, you know. And I think that we've always created our drills, and we'll go over this once we get into, I guess, drills, that they're so high intensity, and there's such a spotlight on every player, and you know, we're competing in every drill in some capacity, where, you know, when you go out on the big stage, and I think, you know, you've seen this with us in the last 2 years, they're just not phased. You know, they play in such a high intensity, you know, atmosphere in practice, that you go out there in front of 30,000 people, it just doesn't matter. I mean, the other teams are great that we're playing, but our guys are just there, I think, conditioned to be so mentally and physically tough because we've been able to create, I think, an environment like that, that they go out there and they gotta, you know, it's really like going out there and letting it all hang out on game day.
Yeah, we have a rule. Once you cross the sideline, you're not allowed to walk.
Yep. Love it. Yeah, I mean, you know.
And then guys, I tell guys, hey, man, if you walk real fast and wiggle your arms, I'll let it go.
Yeah. Just show me you're faking it, at least.
Yeah, I mean.
Now, and again, it's you know, the guys we get here, you know, reputation, you know, precedes itself, obviously. So
right.
I think, like, people know about every program, and if ours is, wow, they're intense, but they. I mean, listen, I've watched, you know, and heard the commenters, you know, the commentators, you know, on our championship games about, you know, not that we're cocky or not that we're, you know, it's just like they have fun, you know, and they get after you, you know. I think that comes with, and we talk about it all the time, one of our favorite kind of sayings around here is, you know, swagger comes from, you know, confidence, and confidence comes from preparation, you know. So, like, if you're going to prep and you're going to work your butt off, you should be confident. And then when you're confident, guess what? You get to earn that swagger, and you get to go out there and play with it. But that fake bravado we've never had here, and never let it fly here. Like, you know, you got to earn it. You got to earn being able to go out there and play with a little bit of that brashness. And that's why, you know, going Division I think it's, you know, it's a quality that you need to have. You know, I think for us, it's, you know, we're going to be playing some really good teams, and teams that, you know, are going to try to make their statements on us pretty early. And I think our guys are certainly, you know, ready for it. They do it every day in practice, and they work on it here.
All right, man. So give me a couple of examples of how you get those guys the significant touches to come out one day, and the next day when you start, you're going full field. Do you ever come out and just run a 3v2 or a 4v3 at the beginning just to set the tone?
Yeah, I mean, being the guy who coaches the defense, you know, those drills are great, but I think they're certainly more so for the offense. Like, I think that, you know, when the offense are getting a finish on your goalie 3-on-2 over and over, I think it's more of a, you know, we do stuff like that on looser days and looser, again, you know, I'll use terms with you that I won't use with them, because it's not looser, it's just, you know, structured different. Like,
right.
You know, if we have a game, if we had a hard game on a Saturday, you know, we're playing next Saturday, like, that would be something Monday we might do. We're going to come out and do more of, you know, where the guys aren't leaning on each other as much, not as much sixes, not as much ground balls. Yeah, odd man stuff and like that. But, you know, one thing we've been able to do, and I think it's really worked for us, is we've kind of created a compete day on a Wednesday, and usually you're playing Saturday. And one thing we do is we basically come out in high rep stick stuff. One of the drills we do, you know, some people call it meatloaf, but we've kind of completely changed it, where, you know, you have a line on the tens, a line on the 50s, a line on the other tens. So you basically have 6 lines. The guys are, you know, breaking out, and we're moving the ball. So one of the things we did is, when we first saw it, I was like, oh, this drill's great. You know, you're throwing 10-yard passes, the guy's cutting diagonally, you know, you got to go pretty quick. So what we changed is, we basically have a point system where the goalies count how many times they touch the ball. So obviously the ball has to go through the goalie as it keeps moving, you know. And basically we do it 5 minutes one rotation one way, and then we basically rotate it the other way and go for 5 minutes. And then after those 10, you know, 120 is pretty good. And if you can get above 120, that's great. And, you know, we figured out really quickly that, all right, well, if we're playing for points, these guys are just hawking the ball around the yard and then grabbing one from sideline quick and going, you know. And then we start saying, all right, how do we kind of keep it quick but also have repercussions? So what we did is basically if there's a throwaway, somebody's got to own it, whether the guy, you know, thought it was a bad throw or the guy should have caught it. So whoever owns it does a lap around the field. So we found kind of the middle ground between you want to play as fast as possible because you want as many touches to break that 120. And then also, you know, you got to be able to not just talk the ball around with no repercussions, you know, because then you're running, you know, and it takes a little while. So it's a good drill for us. We come out with pretty, you know, I'd say a couple, maybe two times a week, maybe three at the most. But then, yeah, from there, I mean, you know, we'll go.
Well, Coach, tell me where the guys start out on that again.
Sure. So we have, so the goalies are in their creases, and literally there's broken up into six lines on the actual tens, like, you know, the physical numbers that are on the turf, and then the 50 on both sides, and then the opposite tens on both sides. You basically have six lines. So you have a guy breaking out, you know, righty from down the corner. He gets the ball, breaks out to the guy at the 50, breaking across, down to the guys in the other line. So you have two balls going at once, same direction. I can send it to you, obviously, but it's a spin on a drill that a lot of people do, but I think right. We've kind of created, and I said it before, we create an atmosphere where, like, there's nowhere to hide. Like, if you're breaking out and there's only two balls live and the other 38 eyes are watching you and you're the guy who drops two in a row, like, guess what? Like, we're not a, you know, they're not a sympathetic team to be like, oh, come on. Like, no, it's like, get on the wall. Like, you're messing up our drill. Like, and guys, it creates, again, that atmosphere of you're breaking out with pressure on and you're trying to break this number. And, you know, I don't care if you're Charlie Bertrand or if you're the last guy on our roster. Like, you're held to the same standard, you know. So that's one that we do. And then, like I said, sometimes we go, you know what, let's do this compete day that I mentioned. And it's funny how it works. You get to find out where your team is, you know. So we would play on a Saturday. You're off Sunday. Monday, like I said, usually lightish. Tuesday, you come back with a regular practice, you know, which for us is, you know, hour and a half at that time of year towards the end of the spring. And then you look and you go, all right, where are we? And if we feel like we need a compete day, you know, we go into a compete day Wednesday. And what we do is we come out with a stick drill like that. And then we have three drills in a row. They're all basically point system. You know, one of them is we have eight lines to the cage where we'll have three on three at the midfield line and then a one on one down kind of on like the wing. And we'll roll the balls out, one ball out. We're playing four on four. If the O scores, it's a point. If the D gets a stop and clears, it's a point. So we'll play to like, you know, first to five or whatever it is. And then we'll do a transition drill. And then we go five on five. And basically it's, you know, offense scores, it's a point. D clears it, it's a point. So whoever wins two of the three drills, you know, offense or defense, the other team does two full field suicides. So you kind of figure out really quickly like where your team is, because 2 years ago when we first won it against Leo, we actually ran it in practice on Wednesday, and the first drill was incredibly chippy and competitive. Second drill, like two fights broke out, and we just looked at each other as a staff. We're like, yeah, we're fine. Like, we don't even need to do the compete day anymore. Like, it just, you realize like where your level of compete is by how your guys are playing. And they were playing like it was a national championship game on a Wednesday, you know, so it was a really good place to be. So then Thursday we went right back to a normal practice and just said, all right. But I think what it does is, it, if your team was maybe lacking a little bit of desire, you put in one of those days where I think it really gets them competing for, you know, two suicides is not fun. And, you know, if there's a little lack of compete, they find it pretty quickly.
Yeah, so give me the three drills again.
Sure. So we'll do, like, the one drill we usually start with is we call it eight lines to the cage. And what we do is we put blues in, well, whatever you want to do. One color is D, one color is O. And then we have three on three, and they're basically just, you know, six guys across the midfield line looking down at one cage. And then on the wing, we'll have, like, just one white, one blue. And then we go even behind them and just, you know, obviously fill in the lines. And then we'll just stand, you know, behind them.
So that's
them.
A 3v3 that morphs into a 4v4?
Yeah, and sometimes we'll roll the ball down to that corner where it's almost a 1v1 for the ground ball. But, yeah, it ends up being a 4v4. And if the O scores, it's a point. If the D gets a stop, they only have to clear it high to 30, because obviously, you know, we try to make the drills realistic where, you know, scoring 4-on-4 is a lot easier than getting a stop and clearing it, you know, so we only have them clear past the 30. And then second drill, we'll do like a transition drill from midfield, which, you know, starts in a clean one on, you know, or whatever you call it, 4-on-3. One of the things we always do with that is we always start with our face-off guy. So anytime we do a transition drill, the clean is always our face-off guy, because we don't ever, I mean, your face-off guy is not going to come down on a 5-on-4 or a 6-on-5. At least you don't want him to, or hope he doesn't. But we always want him starting each rep in the drill where it's basically a clean, you know. So we'll do that, and it's kind of the same concept.
Coach, I don't understand what clean is. You're actually doing him a dummy face-off?
Yep. Yeah, he'll pitch a pop to himself, and then it'll basically come down, and it gives him, you know, probably if we do a transition drill that's about 10 minutes, I would say, you know, 8 to 10, I would probably say with our face-off guys, they probably get about 5, maybe 6 clean each. So they basically just, they, you know, if we're doing a 1, you know, a 4-on-3 to start, he'll go down to stance, down, set, whistle, he pops it out and goes, and then obviously, you know, after that it becomes a 4-on-4, you know, and then you keep going until you're, you know, 6-on-5. But in that drill, it's obviously easier to score for the offense. Defense just has to get a stop. You know, and
so he pops the ball and then he's in the drill, or he passes and he's out of the drill?
No, the tack and D are down low. He's at the midfield line with those other guys, and then basically it's like down, set, he pinches and pops forward to himself, and he comes down on a 4-on-3. So okay. He kind of just starts it, so then after it, he goes out of the drill, and then we come down on the next whistle, it's a 4-on-4, and then it goes to a 5-on-4 or 5-on-5. So he basically is just getting...
So it's got a build-up factor, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we do a lot with that where... that happens to be a drill that it does build up, but we have another drill where we have the guys, we have 6 cones around the midfield area where we have guys going out just in variety to whatever cone, and it'll always be, you know, 3 blue and 3 white. And then we'll whistle and throw the ball to one of the white guys, and it's always different. You could be coming down clean if you're one of the front cones. If I throw it to the back cone, you're coming down to more of a slow break where it's 6-on-5. So it builds variety within it, but that drill that I just kind of mentioned is more so of, you know, just a build-up where same thing, offense scores, they get a point, he just needs a stop. And then we go to the last drill. It's 5-on-5. Basically, you can pick your 5. You know, so essentially, we just require 1 shorty on the D, and the other 4 can be poles, and then the other guys can choose whoever they want, 5 offensive players. And what it does, too, is I'm very big into Darwinism and the sports psychology of what we do, and I think it really shows you who they believe are their best players. And then also you get to see sometimes who are the guys that maybe aren't in the top 5 but yet end up out there because they're older and they kind of just are like, I'm going out, you know. And then, you know, if a team loses, we're very quick to call them out and be like, that's your 5 best. We're not sure as a staff, you know, and they kind of figure out really quickly, like, is ego more important than winning this or running suicides? And you saw it a lot with the last couple years of our teams. They're selfless. Like, they're like, yeah, I know I'm a captain. I'm not in our top 5. Like, whatever. Like, it is what it is, you know, and it's a great place to be. And then you compete, and then when you're done, whoever wins 2 of the 3 drills, the other team runs.
So the 5v5, what are the other guys doing when you got those? They're like cheering them on? Or
yeah. What? I mean, it's only when you're playing 5-on-5, you know, things only.
You're playing to a goal.
Yeah, it's 7-8 minutes. You know, you're not even playing that long. So they're basically, you know, we have different rules where sometimes you can sub guys in if you want, and then sometimes it's just straight 5. But, you know, there's something to, you know, and we're not one that – it's probably the most standing around we'll ever do in a practice, but I think that's one of those beneficial stands around where it's like, you know – like, you're supporting your guys, and then the other guys are out there, and they're playing as hard as they can because their teammates are cheering. So it's like one of those where I don't love...
Are the blues and the whites the same every day on a team, coach, or you change the teams?
No, well, if we're doing just defense, our defense always wears blue, and our offense always wears white.
I'm sorry. That's a D versus O kind of 5v5.
Oh, yeah, that's just 5-on-5. Okay. So what we'll end up seeing, though, is when we do full field, you know, we'll switch it up from day to day. You know, we'll put it sometimes, you know... We'll take the third, you know, the third D midi, and we'll move him up to play with the 1, and we'll kind of separate those guys. So it gets guys used to playing. I mean, listen, there's going to be injuries, and, you know, there's going to be stuff like that where basically, sure, you know, you're going to have to be used to that. But I like the fact these guys competing against each other that hard, and you know, and it showed. I mean, the last couple of years, I mean, we don't like I said, standing around, but I think there's something beneficial to, you know, kind of being out there or visible for everybody to see, you know, if you can beat these other guys.
Well, and I love the fact that you got the competition wrapped up in 3 relatively fast-paced drills. So for those 3 drills, I mean, we're basically talking about, what, 15 minutes, 18 minutes?
Yeah, we've never gone past 20 in it, you know, because
right,
sometimes,
well, that's what I meant, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes guys win it quick, you know, sometimes, you know, the offense catches fire in the eight lines and they're scoring and that one drill ends in, you know, 4 minutes and then you move on to the next one. But yeah, it's never more. I mean, listen, we've gone, and one of the mistakes I made as a younger coach is I think we would practice that 2 hours, you know, that we had slotted late into like April and even into May. And now it's like, we're never more than an hour and a half after, I'd say, April. You know, it's like, we just know what we are. We just got to go out, rep it, do this. And then, you know, there's film built in. There's, you know, there's different meetings and stuff that we go over. But, like, on field, I just don't think – I think you burn your team out like that. I think, you know, hitting on three drills that are short and physical – you know, the guys are going to be beat up after. You know, it's a good thing on a Wednesday because you can gauge Thursday's practice. That's where, like, that feel comes in. You know, like, where's your team at? You know, and, you know, like, we went to Gillette. It's really funny. This is the circumstances. There's, you know, there's different ways of doing things, and I forget who it was, but there was a Division I team before us, and it was a lot more low-key, and, you know, they're throwing frisbees and, you know, doing, like, air guitars and stuff. And we practiced, I think, just after them. This was 2 years ago. And at one point, I was absolutely crushing the team at midfield. Like, I mean, as mad as we were sloppy and just didn't look like we were ready to go for the championship game. And it's just, you know, there's just different ways of doing things. So for us, it's very high intense, and there's, you know, we'll adjust days and shorten them, and we'll change drills, but we're not changing, you know, the standard for anybody.
Yeah, two comments, man. I think if you're organized and have it together, and, I mean, it's all driven by the practice plans and the prep by the coaches, right? I mean,
yep.
If you can't get it done in 90 minutes, I wonder what you're accomplishing after that. And there's a diminishing return too.
Yep.
You know, I mean, if you're running super fast and the guys are getting gassed and you don't have lag time between drills and all the things that you're doing, you know, that last 15 or 20 minutes getting you to the 2 hours, you know, are we really accomplishing anything?
Yeah. And Mike, even the one thing I've always believed in too is, like, you know, we do those 55, you know, into a 1 minute and kind of have that, you know, the sprinting built in, which, you know, we went over obviously why it works. It's one of those things where we're not a big, like, condition team. Like, we don't run. We don't do. I just think it's just the way we practice.
Right.
There's just, if you're practicing at that speed for that long, it's fine. You know, I don't think that, like, never in a lacrosse game, you know, do you run 20 yards and shuffle and then run 20 yards and shuffle. It's like, if you want a condition, they guys should be doing that on their own. I mean, that's why, like, in practice, we do stick work, but it's relevant stick work. Like, our stick work is always involving, like, the way our stick work works offensively, it always looks like our offense. There's pull passes, there's backhand. I mean, there's a lot of different stuff where, you know, some, I think, places or coaches, you know, they put in a generic stick skill, you know, like, oh, we're going to run this to warm up today. And I've always said, like, we don't warm up at Merrimack. Like, our first drill is our first drill. Like, there's no, you know, if you want to warm up, you should have got here 15 minutes before and thrown around with somebody. You know, I think when we're going. And I think that's the one thing that, you know, we try to make everything relevant as best possible to what we do, you know, and, like, defensively.
Well, that's a big thing. I want you to comment on this, man. That's
sure.
A big thing on our website. You know, you and I were talking off the air about my research and writing, you know, on the millennials and now Generation Z and all those kind of things. You know, we've gotten away from any drill that doesn't directly emulate a game situation because of the players wanting to know why we're running this drill.
Yep.
And in the old days, you know, kids grow up in a society today, in a culture where, you know, every time you turn on the TV, does anybody even watch the news on TV anymore?
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
I mean, but any time they see any kind of public thing about an authority figure, a lot of times they're being questioned, right? I mean, people question the President of the United States. People question religious icons. People question all these authority figures. And, you know, they grow up in a culture of asking why is part of the norm.
Sure.
You know, so I think good coaches, either they explain it or the players understand that we're doing this drill because there's something that directly emulates a game scenario that is going to make us better, or maybe it's something we need to address from a previous performance that we didn't do well.
Yeah, and I'm more the latter. I'm not one that cares to sit down and explain to everybody why we're doing something. I think what they do, and I've always believed, I talk to our staff about this all the time, and as long as you're always outworking them and they see it and it's very clear, like there would be days where, you know, they're, you know, I'm walking out of here, Coach Smith, whoever, you know, it's a Sunday at like 3 o'clock. We came up here for a few hours to get some stuff done. And the guys are, you know, walking in the locker room and they're like, wow. Okay. And then if they see a practice plan, I mentioned this before, every single day with a relevant quote, you know, they see the film chopped where, you know, all these notes are, wow, it's dead on. Like, I think it helps your ability. I mean, winning certainly helps too. People don't question a lot when you're winning. I understand that too. But like, guess what? You get there by your team buying in. I think if they see the work ethic that your staff puts in and they trust your ability to coach, I don't think there's a lot of, you know, with us, there's a lot of just, I say to the guys all the time, just, you know, and I hate it because it's very cliche, or it's become cliche over the last like maybe 5 or 10 years. But, you know, that process, like, just, I say to the guys, worry about today, worry about this drill, you know, worry about your performance in the next drill, and then worry about tomorrow. And then I said it, you know, last few years, and just, you'll look up in May and we'll be in the big stadium. You just got to trust that. But don't, you know, once they start big picture dreaming, they all start to forget how we're going to get there, and everybody has their own idea of emotional, you know, how like, oh, we're going to get there because we want it. Well, you don't get there because you want it. Everybody wants it. You get there because you did this drill great. And we talk about, you know, we say it all the time, we let like, the stack good practices and stack good drills. And guess what? Like, if you keep stacking good practices over and over, you're going to build that momentum and that confidence we talked about. And then, you know, you look up and you're like, all right, because it's, listen, we can control that. We can't control who's going to make the tournament, if we're going to be home or away, you know, and even with our guys this year, I mean, we drew the sixth seed, you know, we had to go on the road and beat number five, number three, number two, number one, you know, in consecutive games, win a national championship on the road. So I think if you have a team that looked at it and went, oh God, we got to go to Mercier, who's tough at home, then we got to go to freaking Adelphi, then we got to go up to Lemoyne, and then we're probably going to play Limestone. Jesus, I mean, it seems daunting. I mean, it did. I mean, we looked at it as a staff, you're like, all right, we got work to do. But if you have guys like we have, and you run your practices like that, just worry about Mercyhurst. And then it was, okay, worry about Adelphi, you know, and then we just kind of kept that mentality. So it was kind of cool seeing it, you know, play out, you know.
Well, I think coaches take it for granted. I mean, you know, I can remember when I went to Auburn, they were like 2-16, right?
Yep.
And the first couple of practices, I mean, getting the culture changed was brutal, especially in the MCLA, a club league, you know. Now, don't get me wrong. Our budget was like $75,000. I mean, it's grown up club lacrosse, you know.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the lesson I just wanted to scream at these guys, you know, have you seen my resume versus yours?
Yeah. That's,
but
that,
you can't. You've got to earn it, you know. And when I do coaches' clinics, you know, recapping what we learned on a website in the last year, stuff like that, you know, I see the coach's eyes roll when I tell him, you need to prove yourself with every practice plan.
Yep.
And you used a word before that I think is just huge with the younger players today, and that is trust.
Yep.
You know, they got to know that you're putting in the hours. They got to know that you're doing the work. They got to know that this practice plan isn't something you pulled out of a binder from 4 years ago because it was practice plan number four.
Yeah, and I think that shows when the guys, I mean, you know, I'll share you one quick story. I think it's also contagious because, you know, we talk about hypocrisy a lot, and I can't sit here yelling at guys for attention to detail, you know, if our practice plan has like 8 misspellings on it and it's not there on time. You know, I can't talk to our guys about, you know, selflessness if I'm the guy who, you know, shows up 2 minutes before practice and like, oh, I got to go get my whistle. Like, you can't, I mean, like, you know, whatever you do, you're going to be, I mean, listen, you're held to a higher standard, and, you know, the lonely at the top is a saying, because it's true. Like, you got to almost be like untouchable with your work ethic, your preparation, because then when you ask it of them, it's very clear. And I came back, it was funny, I was here, I want to say it was Labor Day, and I just came here like to get in a few hours, like I needed to get some stuff done, and I came here, it was like move-in weekend for our guys. And as I was walking in, I look out, and it was Charlie Bertrand, Sean Black, some of our better players, and a bunch of freshmen, and they were out there like shooting stick, and not like just hanging out shooting, like they had like balls and they were like, yeah, getting after, you know. And I go in there and I get in my 4 hours and I come out and I'm like, you know what, like, that's just the culture here now. Like, here I am on Labor Day coming in for 4 hours because I feel like we need to get some stuff done, or whoever the coaches are that are here all the time or on the road. And then you look at your players and you're like, guess what, like, that's, you know, if I'm doing it, you know what, it isn't crazy for me to ask them. And we said it, if you watch our documentary from the playoff run this year,
yeah, sir.
We talked a little bit about, and the extended one will be coming out, we talked about trust, you know, and we talked about that in pregame. And, you know, we said, you know, you guys trusted us, you trusted your teammates, you trusted the system, you trusted everything about what this program is, and here we are, you know. And I think that's something that you got, and you said it, you have to gain trust. And you know what, like, I think we're in a unique spot, and I think my coaching style is, I'm very you know, I'm very laid back off the field, but then on the field, I'm pretty intense, you know, and I think one of the things that with the consistency is like, I'll rip you one day if you're not focused and you're not running the drill correctly. And then the next drill, you know, the next day you show up and you're dialed in and we've moved on. You know, I'm not going to sit there and hold grudges. So I think for us, it's like we have a trust that we can yell at these guys and they don't just eye roll and walk away like, ah, coach is in a bad mood or this assistant coach is just trying to show off for Coach Morgan. You know, it's like, no, they trust
us. I had a player tell me last week, you hold me to a different standard than you do the rest of the team. No kidding.
Yeah, was he a better player?
Yeah.
Yeah, guess what? That's how it works, bud. And that's the one thing that – I'm sorry, what was that?
Well, I was going to say, you know, I tell coaches in my clinics, I love the word you used, hypocritical. I said, how many guys in here are hypocrites? How many guys want their kids to lift weights, condition, strength condition, work on footwork, get on the wall in the off season? You know, and it's not laxcoachmike.com, man. It's the Duke stuff and the plethora.
There you go.
You hear that, Coach?
Yeah, I got it.
Plethora. That's number four on my list here, incidentally. The plethora of available drills and information, whether it's championship productions. And I got no relationship with any of these people. I'm not, you know, I don't have a dog in the hunt financially. But at the end of the day, you know, the coaches that expect their players to do all this stuff and then the coaches aren't holding themselves to the same standard.
For
it's
sure.
Bullshit.
Yep,
you know, and you can't do it. And you know, guys like you and me would follow the head coach through fire no matter what he said.
Yep.
But the players aren't like that today.
Yeah, the one thing that we've talked about, and, you know, I think it might be a Belichick, you know, even though I'm a diehard Giants fan, I always had a, you know, soft spot for the Super Bowls he won with the Giants. And, you know, obviously being up here now, you know, it's watching his success. I mean, he says all the time, he's like, you're not all going to be treated the same. So you're not all going to be treated the same, but you're all going to be treated fairly. You know, and that's what it is. Like, I'm not going to treat every player in this team the same because there's higher expectations for some guys. There's limitations physically for some guys or, you know, maybe their age or their experience. But guess what? I'm not going to treat one guy fair and one guy not fair. Like, I'll treat you all fair. Like, there's no question. But, like, you're not going to be treated the same. Like, I don't treat Charlie Bertrand the same way as I treat some of the lower guys in the roster that are younger, because guess what? You know, I mean, Charlie's a 2-time player of the year, and if he has a practice where he looks a little unfocused, or Sean or Carlin Joyle or some of these guys, yeah, they're going to hear it because there's a higher expectation. And I think, you know, we've all heard it, you know, worry when the coach is not yelling at you, you know, because then they've either given up or they don't think you're good enough. You know, like if the coach is spending time, you know, pushing you, it's because he believes it can help him win games, you know, and this team win games, you know. So I think that's something that, you know, the guys who embrace that, and we always say, like, listen, you know, my job and our job as a staff is to win lacrosse games. That's our only job. Like, literally, it's make sure you guys graduate, you're good off the field, and win lacrosse games. Do you think in a moment we're going to put someone on the field who isn't as good as you because of any other reason other than they're better? Like there's no, he's older, he's younger, he likes Joey's dad. No, like, you're going on the field because you give us the best chance to win. I think the quicker guys realize that, and they're not like you said, oh, he holds me to a different standard, he's being unfair to me, or oh, blah, blah. Like, it's very easy, and you said it with this generation, it's very easy to question and not look in the mirror. And one of the terms, you know, or little things we talked about last year is no one cares. Like, no one cares. You know, the real world, no one cares. Like, oh, we're banged up, we're injured, no one cares. You know, oh, we had a practice, you know, and all the refs were not great, and, you know, like, well, what's-his-name was out with an injury, no one cares. You know, and the quicker you kind of just don't make excuses and you just move on, I think the better you are for it. And one of the things that our guys, you know, they have kind of a little thing where they just make fun of each other. You know, like if someone's like complaining about like, you know, a call or they overreact to missing the net, like our guys will just unmercifully make fun of them, you know, and then it's like they kind of just are like, oh, yeah, that was kind of selfish that I'm just bitching that I shot wide myself, you know. It's like we're a team here, bud. Like, it's not about you, you know. So it's good. I think it's you know, it's a competitive but also joking culture we've been able to try to create.
Cool, man. Hey, let's get back into some drills, Coach.
Sure.
Let's stay on the compete day after we run the best out of three. What other kind of stuff are we doing?
So when we go to sixes from now on, you know, one of the things we've done is like we said, we limit it to, I mean, 12 minutes would be if we're, you know, kind of repping a new O or maybe going over some zone defense or something. But usually it's probably about 8 to 10 minutes where we do sixes. One thing we've changed, we do this with full field as well, is there's always situational. Like, there's never, and one thing we did, you know, we did this about 5 or 6 years ago, is we would watch our full field, we would just slot full field, you know, 10 minutes, and we would basically just even, you know, sometimes not even put 10 minutes up on the clock. Sometimes, you know, we have 10 minutes up there. And the guys would just play. And what it was exactly that. They were playing, you know, and it was like they would just go up and down. If someone scored, oh, okay, face off, you know. So what we've done with sixes now is we've started to vary the shot clock and where the shot clock is. And then we've also started to vary, you know, what the situation is. So it's like, all right, you know, Merrimack offense, you guys are up one. There's, let's just say, 2:10 left in the game, and there's like 50 on the shot clock. So what we were able to do is really like start to micromanage in a good way, like their understanding of situational lacrosse. You know, like we had one game where we were going full field, and the one team was up two, I want to say, with like around the same, about 2 minutes left. And one of our attackmen had the ball, and they were kind of, you know, they were running it out, just figuring, all right, well, we're going to get this down to under a minute with a two-goal lead. That's kind of what we want. And when the shot clock was running down, one of our attackmen fed a cutter to the crease with about 2 seconds left because he was quasi-open. Ball ends up hitting off a stick, goes the other way. They score, cut it to one with about 1:15 left. And we, like, stopped, you know, full field, which I rarely do. And we would just say, like, what are you seeing there? And he's like, well, I mean, there's only 2 seconds on the shot clock. And we're like, okay, perfect answer. We don't care about, like, dump the ball to the corner. So we started to teach them and understand, like, okay, he's kind of open, but I'd rather just dump that ball and we have, you know, a minute left, whatever it is, with a two-goal lead and a very good defense and a good faceoff guy. So it's like, you know, you're able to do that more, and then, you know, you start to incorporate, you know, in sixes more end line plays. You know, honestly, if you're doing, hey, 30 seconds, tie game, you know, all of a sudden, shot goes wide, there's, you know, 5 seconds left on the shot clock and the game clock, you're down one, you know, guys are now conditioned to looking to the bench, or, you know, if you get to the next level where I think we've got the last couple of years of our attack, they have the plays that we want to run off the end line in their mind, so they know, shot out the end line under 10 seconds, this is what we're going to, you know, and it really kind of changes practice from, hey, let's just do sixes for 10 minutes and just have no repercussions for who scores, or it just has them focus more on, right, you know, especially the shot clock, and focus on like situational stuff. So even with full field, we'll just, you know, we'll say, all right, you know, fourth quarter, you know, White's up one, 15 minutes, let's go. And then it starts, and then they start to understand. And what they do is they really value, because when you have a score to look at and a time to look at, it's a weird human instinct that you don't just throw the ball around. You know, you have a focus on, like, no, it means more. And it's so weird that all you're doing is turning a clock on, but it changes everything, because our full field used to be a lot sloppier, because guys just were like, oh, we go up and down now. It's like, well, no, we got to value the ball. We got to take what's there. We have it. And I think that situational part has really helped us. Even with man up, man down, we've done the same. You know, we'll put up on the clock, here's what's left in the man up, man down. I think we used to, and a lot of coaches still do it, they just start a man up, and they'll go, all right, let's go. And then they move it around. All of a sudden the defense is, you know, defense has like a 70-second stop. And it's like, well, can we stop it and tell them they got to stop? Like, you know, it's not just keep continuously doing it. So it's like almost knowing, okay, you know, 4 seconds left the man up. We want to give up the shot from that guy. We don't want to give it up from here. So the guys can kind of condition themselves in practice better.
I did a podcast with Bevel one time, and his man down was 0.110. Teams were scoring on him one out of 10 times. Okay.
Jeez.
And, you know, Bev, and I'm going, hey, coach, I said, you know, without giving anything away proprietary, I mean, this is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what are you conceptually doing with your man up, man down in practice? But, you know, it's like, and, you know, typical Bevel, right? He's like 30-second delay. He goes, we figure out who the shooters are, and we cover them.
Yeah. never thought of that. But no, there's something to that. I mean,
it's like out of the mouths of babes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we got, okay, they go 3-3, they're going to rotate this guy out. When the guy carries north, here's what we're going to do, blah, blah, blah. And, okay, man, let's make sure we got Billy and Johnny blanketed.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've always
been
very consistent with that, too. Like, I've always
believed
that percentages don't lie, you know, and if you have a kid who's shooting 18%, you know, yeah, maybe he sings one every once in a while, but guess what? Like, you know, we're going to play percentages. We're going to make that kid shoot it. And even,
right. You
know, in-game when we do scouting reports, you know, there's some guys that I'll look and go, okay, he's a really good player, but then I'll look at his stats, and I'm like, this kid's a facilitator. And then we'll look at each other and say, you know what? We're just not sliding him until he scores once or twice, and then we'll start, but we're not, you know. And I think that's one thing that people, you know, I think people overlook sometimes is like they try to be perfect in, oh, we can do this, we can rotate here, we can shut here, blah, blah. But like I said, and like Bevel said, sometimes it's really just about the simplest things to be like, you know what, let's not overcomplicate it, let's do this. And you do it as coaches. I mean, we did it, and I can share it now, but we were going to the national championship against Leo. One of their, I thought, advantages was they were really good in transition. I mean, I would say aggressive, borderlining on reckless at times, but they really pushed it. And if you subbed bad or you didn't get in the hole and you didn't support it, like, they were very good. So we put in a little bit of a zone drop ride where basically we kind of, like, dropped into a zone if they cleared the midfield line. And we were just like, right, you know what? We're not going to allow them to have early offense. We'll play a little zone, and then if they're subbing, we can then mark up and man. You know, it's fine. And it looked so bad on that Monday. Like, our guys couldn't conceptually understand, like, what I was trying to ask them to do. And then Tuesday, about halfway through it, it looked bad again. And that's where I think, as a coach, like, you got to be able to be like, you know what, it's not about – like, I believe that was the best way to do it. I still believe it was. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to force something our guys don't understand and have them be uncomfortable with it. So we you know, scrapped it immediately. Like, we were like, you know what, done. Like, let's move on. Let's just stay with our normal drop ride. We'll do this. We'll put a concentration. So, you know – I think you do always come in with a plan, excuse me, but then sometimes you got to adjust it. I mean, there's no question about it.
What's the kid's most favorite drill, Coach?
Probably we do a timed 5-on-5 where basically the ball starts in the corner and, you know, there's 5-0, 5-D, and then we put the shot clock on about 35. So it's really competitive because the D knows that, wow, we only got to defend for 35 seconds. And then the O has to go because they only have 35 seconds. So, like, those type of drills, I would say, I don't know, I think if they have a favorite, I don't think it's a great drill, honestly. I think if they really, like, are like, oh, I really want to do that drill, it means that maybe it's fun, but I don't know if there's that like, we used to do some people call it hoops, UVA, where you have the two nets at the 30s and you're going – 3-on-2 both directions, and I think you want to, and I think if you have a team that understands what you're trying to accomplish there, it's great. It's loose, the sticks. Last year's team for us was very, very young, and when we would do that drill, it just turned the vibe of practice into, like, we're hanging out. Like, we're just being slick, we're moving the ball, and I think you got to be able to feel the pulse of your team. Like, last year, like, 2 years ago, our team could do it, and they knew.
Is that like a West Denny drill, Coach?
Yeah, it was basically just you come down 3-on-2, you know, right, the guy who shoots it's out, the other two guys get in, and they're coming the other way, three guys from that, you know, that goal line, you know. And it's weird. When, you know, a team like ours was young, I watched our guys, and it just, we would do it in the middle of practice, and it turned into, like, you know, it's like everybody tried to be slick. Like, it was, and we just said, you know what? No. And that's a drill they liked last year. And I wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't run it because I was like, yeah, they like it for all the wrong reasons, you know. But I think our guys have figured when we're playing for something, which is almost every drill from now on with us, that's their favorite drill. Like, when they get to compete against each other and talk a little trash and be a tight team, but also, you know, go at it, I think it's a cool environment. You know, you just got to, you know, we've balanced out the compete drills with also the relevant drills. I mean, we do, you know, last couple years what we've done is we've kind of repped within our clear, I guess, would be the best way example, just reading two-on-ones, you know, coming up the sideline. So we have it going in both directions where, you know, we roll it to one alley, that defender picks it up, he's running up the field, and there's basically like a, you know, a two-on-two, you know, depending on where the guys are in our clear. And then the guys who are on D, quote-unquote, who are obviously the Merrimack guys just in blue, they kind of vary. Do they jump the ball? Do they drop? Do they kind of zone? So it teaches our guys, like, you know, instead of just doing clearing, like, we do this, you know. So I think we do that with RO and RD and everything, where everything is like a small component of the big picture, and they get good at that, and then you start to put it all together. And that's why I think, like, our defense, you know, I mean, you look at them last year, and they didn't hit their stride till the end of April, you know, because it was a really young group, and they were still becoming fundamentally there. And then once you become fundamentally there, you start to play together. And then once you start to play together, you start to get confident, you know, and they start to trust each other, like we talked before. So I think that's something where if we do the small components that everybody kind of understands, it makes it easier to kind of, I guess, paint the big picture.
Yeah, explain that 2v2. So you roll it out to the pole,
sure,
in the corner?
Yeah, so what we do is we have it set up like we're in full field, with the exception of half the middies, blue and white, are on one side of the field, the 50, and half the middies are on the other side of the 50, blue and white. And then we basically have two guys out there, you know, in white, say on offense, one might be at the 50, one might be at the 40. And then we roll the ball out going both directions counterclockwise. So, like, goalie rolls the ball out, defender picks up in the alley, you know, he goes up the sideline, and then those guys at the two-on-two, obviously with the four middies, and then the middies on D are just trying to deceive the pull. Like, they might drop with him, they might jump late, they might zone. So he's got to kind of come up and read a quick two-on-one. And then the other side of the field, the same thing's happening. You know, the alley, opposite alley coming up, and it just goes in one big circle. So the guys, you know, instead of running are clear, where it's like they're looking at too many things, they're trying to process too many things, we do this stuff first where they kind of start to understand the two-on-one. And then once we get in the actual clear, it's all instinctual. You know, they're not like, oh, wait, over, under, blah, blah. It's like, no, if you can't read the 2-on-1, reverse it. It's fine. You know, and I think
I'm having trouble picturing it, Coach. So the ball to the pole, and then there's a two blue middies and one white. Let's say the pole's in white.
Yep.
So you roll the ball to the pole, one white middies in the drill, two blue middies are in the drill, and they're just adjusting how they're going to ride that 2v2?
Yeah, so let's just say, like, you know, the white middies who are on offense, one's at the 50, and one's at the 40, kind of, you know, near the same alley. So that guy, you know, the pole will pick the ball up in the alley after it gets rolled out by the goalie at, you know, at the 15-yard line. So, you know, on the whistle, he picks it up. When he's coming up, those two blue guys are covering the two white middies. And then basically as he gets towards midfield, they start to either rotate into him, they'll drop, you know, so he's got to be able to come up full speed, because there's going to be times where those two middies shut.
And
the pole's got to carry over, you know. So, like, it's going. And then what we do is after we go for about 5 minutes, we switch the middies colors, you know. So now, you know, some middies are on O that were riding before. So, and again, where you put the middies is, and I'm not going to obviously, you know, give it away, but, like, where we put our middies on our clear is where the O middies are in this drill. You know, so we have, like, three clears. So basically where those two middies are on that side of the field are very specific to what our clear is. So the reads, and again, the reads are the same. You know, so
let's say they clear the ball past the midfield line. Either the guy jumps the pole and he hits the open guy, or you created that 2v1 you were looking at.
Yep.
Do they just go down and circle around to the other side, or are they coming down the cage?
Nope, that's
kind of the end of the drill right there?
Yeah, that one's more of a riding clear, or more of a clearing drill than it is a transition drill for us. It's more about just once they get over midfield, they make that pass or they carry, it just gets dumped down to the goalie, you know, and then basically we're just going again. You know, we got to keep it rolling. So there's not...
Yeah, the thing that, what was going through my head was, you know, it's so difficult on the site sometimes, Coach, because the high school guys that are listening will say, oh, I can't run that. I don't have enough guys. I don't have this. I don't have that.
Yep.
But you could run this with a high school roster easily and get conditioning in the same time.
Well, what I would do is if I was a high school guy, and well, trust me, I had about 21 guys maybe at St. Dominic's, like, you know, just do it one side of the field. You know, like, you just basically, you know, have, you know, once those middies and that pole get to the other end, just peel off, come down the sideline, and come back to the drill. And then, you know, obviously you have the next guys going. So you just go down one sideline, you know. And that's the limitations. I mean, we had a bunch of injuries a few years ago where we had to kind of start to limit some of the stuff we did in practice. But I always feel like there's a way. You know, I feel like, you know, you just got to be creative in how you do it.
Well, and that's what I do, man. I'll take these drills with the college guys and say, hey, man, if you got 26 guys on your roster, try this.
Yep.
You know, run it with two attack or two poles instead of...
And even the drills we've talked
about.
Yeah, I mean, the drills we've talked about, I mean, I don't think there's one of them that we've talked about that you can't run with 25 guys. You know, I think that's why, you know, I think there's also something to that where the drills we run, even though I think you can run them with less guys, I mean, it's very high reps, you know, like, I mean, you know, in the transition drills, in sixes, like, you know, we'll rotate in the groups of sixes based on, you know, maybe like three sets. Those guys go out there, you know, they might have a 40-second shot clock, they might have a 60, they might have a 15, you know, and then all of a sudden the next group goes out. So there's constant variety of, you know, one thing we've done here, and I think this has been one of the strengths of our staff, is I think we really develop not only the talent, but, like, the understanding of what we're doing. Like, I think these guys really become, I think we've seen it the last couple of years how many of these guys are getting into coaching. You know, I think that's a big part of it, that are leaving here, you know. I think we're trying to develop, I think people always say, like, oh, Merrimack plays so fast, they play so fast. If you watch us, we don't play super fast defensively or offensively. It's just both groups move really well together, and the ball moves, and we rotate really quickly. Between the lines, we're pretty aggressive, more so a couple years ago than last year. But this reputation of us playing, like, super fast, I guess you could say if you're banging the ball around, you're constantly dodging, that's fast. And if defensively you're on a great climb and you're in guys' hands and the slide's ready and they move it and you're moving quick as a unit, then I guess we do play fast. But I think fast can be misconstrued with, like, reckless, You know, I mean, like Mike Daly, who I've known a really long time and I really respect, and Daly once told me, when he was at Tufts, he's like, yeah, I don't care if we lead the country in turnovers. And, like, my skin crawled. Like, I was like, oh, my God. Like, you know, and they were winning national championships. So there's different ways of doing it. But, like, us playing fast, I wouldn't say jam the crease, you know, from south-north if anybody's cutting. And they were just so good at it, and they would do it. So, like, for us, it's like, you know, the reputation of playing fast, I think, has many different definitions.
Well, I was looking at the stats. 42 shots a game is fast, but it's not outrageous.
Yeah, look at our shooting percentage. You know, that's the biggest thing. Like, when you look at that, you know, yeah, we put up a decent amount of shots, but guess what? We also average 18 goals a game. Like, I mean, like, what do you, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's the one thing that, you know, we've had people do different, you know, podcasts, different stuff when they talk about Merrimack. They talk about, like, oh, they'll shoot from anywhere. They're such an aggressive team with the ball. And it's like, well, you know, just because we take a lot of good shots, like, you know, and goalies don't make saves on them, it's not a bad thing, you know, and we shoot a very high percentage. So at the end of the day, like, you know, there's something to that. But I think it all comes down to, if your team's going to play fast, it can't be theory. It's got to be repped. Like, you can't just be like, hey, I want to start playing faster this year. It was like, well, that's fine. Like, what does that mean? What drills are you going to do to incorporate playing faster? How much are you going to, you know, instill? And that was one of our concerns when we, you know, started to go more of the two-way route, where guys would push transition, play a little early offense, because we had slick guys that were D-middies and we had good pulls. And one of my fears was, why are we trusting these guys with the ball? We can give the ball to Sean Black and Christian Thomas and, you know, Chuck. And we kind of figured out both, like, okay, we get the ball to the attack, and then we trust the attack's going to make the right decisions. And that's what we kind of did. So it gives us the ability to attack you early, but also those guys have to make the right decisions. Then again, you get back to, how do they know how to make the right decisions? You have to be able to rep the circumstances and what you should be doing. And then if you do that enough, I think then instinctually they just take over in practice, you know, or in games.
Good stuff, man. God, I can't believe it's been an hour.
Yeah, no, it was awesome.
Yeah, I'm not Kucinich, but we're not bad.
Yeah.
So, Coach, we talked off the air a little bit. We try and keep these things timeless, you know, but obviously announcing the big move to D1 and the national championships, and there's some great stuff online about these guys, and I don't own them, but I did look through some of the championship productions video set that Coach has done there, and they've got some snippets on there. Take a look at it, man. It's really, really good stuff. And Coach had talked about getting back into prospect camps. Obviously, going to be a slightly different animal as they go D1, and guys are looking for the academic opportunities that exist at Merrimack at the same time. If you've got any, he's going to. Like I said, we try to keep it timeless, and this is whatever the heck it is, June of 2019. Going to have some prospect camps in the fall at Merrimack. If you need information on that, I'll have this posted on the site too. But shoot me an email and I'll forward it to Coach, or you can email Coach directly, or just keep an eye on their website as we move into July and August, and I'm sure you'll probably see some information there. Is that fair, Coach?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
All right, man. God, I got like 6 pages of notes, and well, I probably understand about 5 of them.
Yeah,
but anyway.
I'm sure. It's not over the top. I mean, this is all either... You know,
I don't know how we didn't get together sooner, man. I just love, love, love the stuff you gave us. Great.
No,
stuff.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, definitely let me know if there's anything in addition, you know, that people want to know about this. But, yeah, hopefully they get some nuggets out of this that, you know, if you get a couple, it's always worth it. You know, and hopefully we provided a little bit here and there. And, yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, man. Continued success to you, Coach. Hey, stay on with me here as we sign off. /CoachMike, lastcoachmike.com. Special thanks to this great coach for coming on and sharing some of the things that have made them so successful and will continue to make them successful in the future. Hey, man, don't ever forget, it's an unbelievable responsibility influencing the lives of these young people. Take it seriously every day. Until next time, this is Last Coach Mike, lastcoachmike.com.
Hey, man, Last Coach Mike here. Hope you got all that. Check out our article page. For those of you that are free members, this gives you an idea of what we have in the podcast library. I think it's like 164 hours or so. If you're interested in going premium, you can come and go as you want. Just hit the upgrade button in the site. Again, Last Coach Mike, lastcoachmike.com. Man, you guys are awesome. 10 years and rolling. We're so humbled by all your support of our projects. Thank you so much. Until next time.